trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. You know, shows like this exist because truth doesn't mind being questioned. On the other hand, a lie doesn't like being challenged. I know there are many voices out there speaking up, challenging the lies, promoting the truth. I'm just one of them, but I'm thankful that you're part of my audience today. Welcome, and make yourself comfortable. If you are comfortable with wrong think, well, you already know. This is not about proving how right I am and how everybody else should see things my way. It's about learning to think clearly and independently for yourself and not being at the mercy of highly paid spinmeisters and, you know, blow-dried propaganda dispensers to tell you what you're supposed to think. So I commend you for taking charge of your own thinking and commend you for, if you're just dabbling in wrong things for the first time, having the courage to do so. Heaven knows, it's not the easiest thing. Our program is brought to you by great sponsors like LifesavingFood.com, the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, HSLAmmo.com, also SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, GovernYourIncome.com, and MonticelloCollege.org. So today you're going to get some pretty difficult truths. And I feel like I need to give this warning. You know, this is the Surgeon General's warning. There's some hard facts that we're going to be facing today, particularly regarding the economic storm that is looming before us. I know our attention has been mostly focused on, you know, the COVID-19 response and retaining our freedoms in the face of a real all-out onslaught against your personal liberty. And that's important. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, gee, we were distracted and all this other stuff took place. But sometimes it's hard to forget that there has been a building economic storm, and we're going to face some of the hard facts about that today. But in the meantime, one of the good things about difficult times is that every one of us has the opportunity to learn a degree of resiliency simply by going through them. Now, I'm not suggesting, therefore, it's pleasant, you know, put a smile on your face. I mean, it helps to be positive, but I'm not going to pretend like hard times or anything but hard times. They're hard for a reason. But if you can understand that this is a season that we're passing through right now, it feels like it's taking a long time and probably looks like, man, this is going to go on, you know, for the foreseeable future. But we've been through difficult things before. As individuals, as a society, as civilizations, we have seen difficult times come and go. My message to you is that nothing matters more than retaining your values, being the best version of yourself that you can be, as true as you can to the things that you really believe. Because on the other side of all this, we're going to be better for having gone through it. Not that we would have chosen to go through it, not that we wanted that polishing and refining, but that's the opportunity that's in front of us. And I suspect that if you are the kind of person who, number one, has found this show, and secondly, is willing to listen to this program, you're probably one of those people who's okay with suffering some discomfort or even legitimate pain in order to become a more refined, better version of yourself. And I will just add, you know, as hard as this may be, with God's help, it's all possible. In fact, really, that's going to be the key to success. The people who seek God's help are the ones who are going to find, you know what, we got through it just fine. I've got an article here from James Howard Kunstler that has a very tough but thorough analysis of what we are facing. And it's appropriately titled, No Time for Crybabies. So, like I said, with diving right into the tough love, here we go. James Howard Kunstler says, you know what most America wants? Most of America wants? He says, I'll tell you. America wants daddy to step up and say, okay, you can stop being insane now, really. Enough is enough. But the trouble is, America is short on daddies these days. That's what happens when you throw the patriarchy on the old garbage barge. Now, Mr. Trump was kind of a daddy, but to many women especially, he was the wrong kind. He was the bad daddy, the worst kind of daddy, the kind who makes you clean up your room and come home before midnight. So they traded him in for a demented grandpa. He just wants to fondle you, and not in a good way. But family decorum requires that we don't talk about that. In the meantime, we can do whatever we feel like. He says it's a fact that more educated folks are more susceptible to mass delusion. And the reason will surprise you. It's because of status seeking. Yes, even more than money, we're hardwired for it. And status is liable to send money in your direction anyway. Among the educated managerial class, going along with everybody else is crucial because careerism in a bureaucratic system, public or private, demands it. If you seek to rise in the hierarchy or are just angling for brownie points, you must appear to subscribe to the reigning beliefs of the moment, no matter how crazy. And the punishments are severe for appearing to not go along, like losing your career and livelihood and all prospects of a comfortable life. So the main belief of the moment is that battling the invisible menace called COVID-19 requires the most extreme measures, and that anyone against that is an enemy, a domestic terrorist. Thus, it is most urgent to vaccinate every human being in the nation. Why? Well, because Dr. Tony Fauci, America's doctor, says so. Why does he say so? Because the COVID-19 vaccines are the crowning achievement in his long, vainglorious quest to bring forth a world-saving magic cure for a dread disease. And since Dr. Fauci is the science incarnate, and the science must be followed, because, come on, we are modern people in a modern world ruled by science, we must follow Dr. Fauci. Now, James Howard Kunstler says, but it's obvious now, after a year on the scene, that the vaxes work poorly at best to protect against infection or control the spread, and at worst, induce terrible long-term damage to organs, blood vessels, and the immune system. The vaxes can kill you or gravely disable you. He says the statistics in the CDC's VAERS registry shows this in no uncertain terms. 1,003,992 COVID vax adverse events reported, including 21,745 deaths linked to them through January 7th. And these figures are said to be deeply understated due to the poor design and difficulty in using the VAERS website with its clunky, outdated code that the CDC refuses to fix. Now, he says Dr. Fauci has avoided addressing these adverse reactions and the negative efficacy of the vaccines. He just simply states the vaccines are safe and effective. That so many Americans believe him, despite all the evidence, and go along with the crusade to vax up everybody, is proof that they are insane. But he says now that the whole story is unraveling, they are more determined than ever to stick to the script. COVID-19 has been their security blanket for 2 years. As long as it was in the picture, raging and killing as an invisible demon, it could be the focus of all of their free-floating terror. Terror of what, you might ask? Well, of the meaningless alienation and debility induced by the managerial class in its own sick institutions and corporations. In short, the 21st century America that the managers evolved in and supported, a culture of junk food, junk work, junk art, junk environments, junk government, junk economics, and lately, junk science. A sickening panorama of systems out of control and entering failure mode. Now, confronting the disaster of its own incapacity to sustain a healthy culture and an economy with a future, the managerial class went nuts. Its insane actions are now killing people while seeking to punish those who refuse to walk sheepishly into America's version of the gas chamber, the Anthony Fauci vaccines. James Howard Kunstler says one way out of a trap like this is to follow your insanity into an all-out Gotterdammerung chaos and destruction. That's the Hitler way, preceded by a period of psychotic totalitarian social control and sadistic scapegoating. He says, I don't recommend it. But when it's over, there's not much left to assist the continuity of the human project. But we are led at the moment by a very party of chaos that's making all of those moves. Check the boxes. Social control freakery? Check. Punishment unto the unvaxxed? Check. Loony war drumming? Check. The cries for more lockdowns and punishments will grow shrill as Omicron burns across the land, presenting a fair chance of putting a stop to COVID-19. We'll know in a couple of weeks where this is going. Will all those telltale all-cause deaths mount in the insurance companies, suggesting the vaccines seeded millions with lurking illness? Will the public turn on Dr. Fauci and run him from public health to rough justice? Will the inept Joe Biden regime start World War III in Ukraine, a place of no real interest to us or the South China Sea, just to change the channel? He says you can feel the paradigm straining to shift under your feet now. For that degenerate managerial class and its psychotically woke up minions on the campuses and in the newsrooms, this thing would likely go the Schopenhauer way. The new paradigm is at first ridiculed, then violently opposed, then accepted as self-evident. Snap your fingers and they'll come out of it just like that. But he says the rest of us who are left on dry land right now as an economic riptide takes the drowning out to sea, we have a lot of work to do. And he says it'll be no time for crybabies.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So I wasn't kidding, was I, right? I got off to a rip-roaring start. Dove headfirst into the rough news, the tough truth, if you will. But I won't apologize for it. And look, I know you're not here because you're some kind of a masochist and you enjoy pain or you enjoy, you know, hearing unpleasant truths. I suspect you are probably in our growing audience of wrong thinkers just because you understand that somewhere underneath all the confusion and all of the jockeying back and forth for power, the truth really matters. At a very individual level, it matters to understand what's going on and to understand what you and I can do within our respective spheres of influence to make a difference. And I want to talk for just a second about influence. Got a friend of mine, John Harvey. He's a businessman from Salt Lake City, very successful guy. He's also a very outspoken defender of freedom. And the other day he was attending a meeting on Capitol Hill in Utah, and this is prior to the legislative session, which just started up. And he was there meeting with the governor, among other people, and actually posed for a picture with the governor. And it's kind of sad how many people were calling him out. John, you sold out. Why would you go and pose with Spencer Cox? Why would you pose with the governor? No, granted, among freedom lovers, the governor is not exactly an inspiring figure. He's more like a political suit insert. You know, he's the typical politician. Shades of Mitt Romney. But I got to commend John for doing this. Rather than, you know, drawing a hard line, I will not even pose with someone who opposes me or someone whose ideals don't line up with me. He maintained open channels of communication. In fact, he was able to talk about some very important things with the governor. And while to some people that may seem like a sellout, I think there's something a little bit deeper at work, and I think that's an example of someone using their influence as wisely as they can where they happen to be at that moment. Now look, it may seem really principled, well, I'll turn my back on everybody who doesn't agree with me. But if you're serious about changing the world, at some level you're going to have to change hearts and minds. And that means you're going to have to engage other people, including people that you don't agree with. Be willing to do it. That doesn't mean you have to sell out your values, but it just means be willing to use your influence as wisely as you can. Pick those battles carefully. Speaking of picking your battles, this may not be a popular sentiment, but there's a lot of folks out there with a perpetual sense of being offended and looking for reasons to be offended. Thomas L. Knapp, writing for the William Lloyd Garrison Center, has a great article on pockets, legs, and polarization. He starts out with a quote from Dr. Timothy Snyder, who says, "For the people who actually study the origins of civil wars, not just in the U.S., but as a class of events, America doesn't look good right now, with its high degree of polarization, with its alternative reality, with its celebration of violence." Now, Snyder's remarks are specific in context, he points out, but Thomas Knapp says they concern a prospective attempt to steal the 2024 presidential election on behalf of Donald Trump, so he does seem to have a point. America certainly is polarized, or at least most Americans seem to think so. And since polarization is about what people think, it kind of amounts to the same thing. Alternative realities and celebrations of violence are both symptoms and causes of such polarization. but the polarization itself seems to be the big problem. And so he asked, what can we do about polarization, though? Well, as long as there are issues, people will hold different opinions on those issues and polarize on, that is, flock to opposite and mutually exclusive sides of those issues. Now, as the number of contentious issues grows and larger groups coalesce around the bundles of those positions, a more general polarization springs up and scales up in intensity from single-issue polarization. So, here are some good examples. He says, you and I may disagree on whether Paul McCartney died in 1965 and was replaced by a body double. Yet we could still get along quite well. We might also disagree on whether Val Kilmer should have received an Oscar for his portrayal of Doc Holliday in Tombstone and be able to have a beer together without it devolving into a brawl. But sooner or later, you'll cross some final red line, probably by suggesting that pineapple is a legitimate pizza topping, and then, well, we're just done with each other, aren't we? Now, he says, when it comes to political issues, Thomas Jefferson offered a useful standard. The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But he says, it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg, end quote. So Thomas L. Knapp says the way to reduce political polarization is to reduce the number and kinds of issues subject to politics. Jefferson marked out a useful starting point, but he says Henry David Thoreau went him one better. Quote, I heartily accept the motto, that government is best which governs least, and I should like to see it acted up to more rapidly and systematically. Carried out, it finally amounts to this, which I also believe. That government is best which governs not at all. And when men are prepared for it, that will be the kind of government which they will have. End quote. Now Thomas L. Knapp says, look, as a wordsmith, I'm nowhere near Jefferson or Thoreau in skill. But let me offer my own unworthy summary of the dual lesson. The way to reduce political polarization is to give up politics as an instrument through which each of us claims an entitlement to run the lives of others. Do you grasp what he's saying here? And I understand this is going to push some people in a direction they don't really want to go, or at least it's going to push their thinking in a direction that they may not be comfortable with. But the idea here is, if at some level your solutions for what ails society is to control other people, whether it's through the force of government or something else, if you're trying to control others, you're probably not on the right side. In fact, you're probably coming at it from the wrong place. Okay, you say, then what are we supposed to do to solve society's problems? It's going to take something to make things work. No, you're right, it is. And the thing that it's going to take, that so few people seem inclined to embrace, is persuasion. If you're serious about changing people's hearts, you've got to work on your ability to persuade them. And that's not a matter of pleading, and it's not a matter of slick talking your way, you know, past their defenses so that they agree with you. It means you're going to have to learn to reach out to them in such a way that they will listen to what you have to say. Maybe not at that moment. They may, in fact, the first time you speak truth to someone, especially, you know, difficult truths, the reaction often is, you know, it's violent. It's angry. I don't want to see that. Get that out of my sight. Get that out of my head. And that's just a natural defense for people who are bumping into the limits of their mental universe. They're just not ready to examine, much less accept, that particular truth. So rather than force it on them, and there are plenty of examples today of things that are being forced on us, you know, CRT, I know officially it doesn't exist, but at the same time, if you try to keep it from existing, why, that's just the most racist thing ever. Go for the persuasion instead. And here's the most powerful method of persuasion. I've learned this through sad experience. Well, it's actually been good experience, but I had a lot of sad experience before that. If you want to get people to consider a truth that you have to offer, you got to lose the need to win. You got to lose the need to dominate them and to beat them into submission and to get them to say, you're right. Instead, we have to take a higher road. That means you speak the truth with love. And when someone reacts, as they sometimes will, with negativity or violence even, you can't say that to me. Don't return that anger in kind. The idea is there's enough anger out there. We don't need to bring more into the situation. Speak the truth with love. Let them come to the truth on their own terms. But I really mean that when I say speak the truth with love. I mean, don't just condescendingly, well, here's your truth. Now, have fun with it. Actually speak the truth to them like you love them and value them. And you're not going to stop just because you don't see eye to eye on this particular issue. Watch what happens. Hearts do change, although it does take time, but be patient.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being part of our growing audience of wrong thinkers. By the way, this is my invitation to you to please subscribe to my show notes. Very simple matter. You just go to thebrianhydeshow.com. Click on the show notes down at the bottom of whatever show notes page you click on. You'll see a subscribe button. Punch in your email address, and I will drop a copy of my show notes into your inbox every day when I do the show. It's really that simple. And I don't sell your email information or trade it to anybody else. This is just for my listeners, and it's just for your convenience. I understand a lot of people don't have time to listen to the entire program. But if you want to follow up on the articles or the various commentators that I've spoken to, this is a great place to start. So I'm really in awe of the people out there who make it worth your time to read their work. I'm always on the prowl for people who are bringing light and truth to the situation, as opposed to just fear or, you know, distrust or anger, which there are a lot of writers out there that can do this. But Margaret Anna Alice, if I'm going to give you her name, I might as well give it to you right. She has a Substack that I have found well worth my time. And I'm going to warn you that, you know, this isn't like, you know, a little simple, well, we'll just sit down and, you know, casually browse, you know, whatever, you know, she's talking about here. It's going to take some time. I'm looking at an article right now. This is Letter to a Governing Body. And it's obvious that she has put an intense amount of work into distilling her thoughts and her points and making them easily understandable, but also backing them up. So it's not just, you know, free form, you know, here's what I'm thinking, you know, this is where my thoughts are going today. No, she really backs it up. And this is a letter that was adapted from what she says was her letter to the Washington State Board of Health. So in other words, if you read this letter, you may actually find some good tidbits of ways you could approach governing bodies yourself or anybody who's involved in making decisions related, especially to COVID-19. Margaret Anna Alice says, several of my readers are already using this letter in efforts to combat employer mandates. If you use this tool, she says, all I ask is that you include credit and link back to this post. In fact, she says, I'd love to hear about it if you're willing to document your actions in the comments, too. And she starts with a quote from this from a book called Defying Hitler by Sebastian Hafner. Quote, everything went strictly by the book, using means that were permitted by the Constitution. At first, there were decrees, by the President of the Reich. And later, a bill was passed by a two-thirds majority of the Reichstag, giving the government unlimited legislative powers, perfectly in accordance with the rules for changing the Constitution. Now, at this point, Margaret Anna Alice says, I am writing because you are considering legislation or policies related to COVID-19. And she says, although this letter is addressed to a governing body, I'm actually writing to you, you, the living, thinking, feeling individuals who comprise this body. I'm asking that you listen, not in your capacity as a member, but as a fellow human being, as a neighbor, as a friend. For nearly a year, you have been gradually conditioned to view the unvaccinated as enemies. You've been subjected to a relentless propaganda campaign designed to divide you from us, to dehumanize us, to paint us as science deniers, conspiracy nuts, spreaders of disease, and threats to society. And here she quotes from Milton Meyer, his book They Thought They Were Free, the Germans, 1933 to 45. Quote, "Men under pressure are first dehumanized and only then demoralized, not the other way around. Organization and specialization, system, subsystem, and supersystem are the consequence, not the cause, of the totalitarian spirit." Now, Margaret Anna Alice says the United States Holocaust Museum describes this process as defining the enemy, the excluded. Quote, "One crucial factor in creating a cohesive group is to define who is excluded from membership. Nazi propagandists contributed to their regime's policies by publicly identifying groups for exclusion, justifying their outsider status, and inciting hatred or cultivating indifference. But a second, more sinister aspect of the Nazi myth was that not all Germans were welcome in the new community. Propaganda helped to define who would be excluded from the new society and justified measures against the outsiders." End quote. Margaret Anna Alice says, regardless of what the propagandists have told you, we are not your enemies. We are your neighbors, we are your colleagues, we are your friends, we're your family members, your grandparents, your parents, your siblings, your children. We are human beings just like you. We love, we live, we think, we feel. We have merely made a different choice from you. And contrary to what the propagandists tell you, that choice poses no threat to you or our shared community. I'm going to just hit the pause button here for a second and say, is that not refreshing? I mean, she's saying it about as powerfully and directly as it can be said. But what a different approach from the anger of, you will listen to every dang word I have to say. You know, she's taking a much more subtle approach here. Do you suppose that people who occupy these governing bodies would be more inclined to listen than if she comes at them, you know, both barrels blazing? Now, from here, she links to a CDC paper titled Outbreak of SARS-CoV-2 Infections, Including COVID-19 Vaccine Breakthrough Infections Associated with Large Gatherings, from Barnstable County, Massachusetts, July 2021. And the paper explains that the study found 3/4 of cases occurred in fully vaccinated people. And she has a citation from it. Quote, "It also found no significant difference in the viral load present in the breakthrough infections occurring in fully vaccinated people and the other cases, suggesting the viral load of vaccinated and unvaccinated persons infected with the coronavirus is similar." End quote. Now, she also points out that news stories documenting COVID outbreaks in fully vaccinated groups keep emerging, and she links to each one of them, including cruise ships like the MS Europa, MS Europa 2, Mein Schiff 6, and Idanova. While reporting on a third Royal Caribbean cruise ship outbreak, the Miami Herald noted, the CDC reported there were 5,013 confirmed COVID-19 cases on cruise ships between December 15th and December 29th, compared to just 162 cases 2 weeks prior, November 30th to December 14th. According to the CDC's database for COVID-19 on cruise ships, as of Wednesday, all 92 cruise ships currently sailing in U.S. waters had people on board infected by COVID-19. End quote. So Margaret Anna Ellis says, after Puerto Rico health insurer MMM MultiHealth lost a court case that struck down their mandate and restored employees' rights to decide about what would be injected into their bodies, the company instituted segregation. One building housed fully vaccinated employees, while the second building housed unvaccinated employees. Guess which building experienced a COVID outbreak and which one didn't? It's the opposite of what the media tells you. In this perfect real-world case control study, the building with the fully vaccinated employees suffered an outbreak, while the unvaccinated remained protected by their natural immunity, which has been proven superior to vaccination by 145 research studies to date. And yes, she does link to those studies. And then consider this scenario at an Antarctica station, 100% vaxxed, 100% remote, and quarantined. Still, outbreak in 2/3. And she says, I know what you're thinking. Okay, but what about the hospitals being overwhelmed by the unvaccinated? Well, big surprise. You've been deceived about that, too. At a regional New York hospital serving a community with an under 50% vaccination rate, 90% of the individuals admitted to the hospital were documented to have received this vaccine. The latest UK data reveals that vaccinated individuals comprise the majority of all hospitalizations and deaths in the over 50 group, a pattern that's becoming increasingly common. If a vaccine does not prevent people from spreading or contracting COVID, being hospitalized or dying from COVID, what possible justification can you provide for instituting policies such as mandating the COVID-19 vaccine, requiring passports, or detaining individuals and families in quarantine facilities? And she says that's only part of the story. The other part of the story, the one the propagandists don't show you, is the CDC's vaccine surveillance system has just surpassed an historic 1 million adverse event reports. For the COVID vaccines, that includes 21,382 deaths, 5,252 of which occurred within the first 48 hours following the injection. And she says, contemplate that for just a moment. Nearly a quarter of reported deaths occurred within the first 2 days after vaccination. Oh, and by the way, she supplies some charts to back this assertion up. We're going to come back to this article by Margaret Anna Alice. It's linked in the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. Well worth your time to sit down and take this one in for yourself.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just going to give a quick shout out here to lifesavingfood.com. I talked yesterday about some of the supply chain challenges that are approaching. And you're going to get even more information that hopefully will spur you to action coming up in the second hour of the program. Because, look, we're in a very precarious situation. And this is not time to lose your cool and run around, you know, with your arms in the air screaming. It's time to take some decisive steps to improve your situation, to hedge against the uncertainty that is building all around us. This is where lifesavingfood.com can be a huge source of peace of mind. Yes, it's food storage with a 25-year shelf life. There are lots of different varieties to choose from. You can get, full-on food storage programs, a year's supply, right down to a 72-hour kit to individual buckets that are easily stackable, but still have the same great freeze-dried and dehydrated foods. All you have to do is add water. Best of all, as a listener to this program, you get a 20% discount, free shipping, and no sales tax. Click on the link I provide in the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. It's lifesavingfood.com. So I'm sharing this article with you from Margaret Anna Alice. She has a Substack, and this is one of the most comprehensive articles. It's called Letter to a Governing Body. And I think it's a great example of how to go about making the case to someone who is in a position of authority. Now, look, I get frustrated with politicians. I get frustrated with bureaucrats. There's times that I'm feeling something very close to contempt for all of them just because the systems have been so thoroughly corrupted. It's really hard to find anybody who I think behaves respectably and restrains themselves. There are some who do. So I don't want to throw everybody under the bus, but It's hard to feel enthusiastic about shaking hands with people who are taking an active role in destroying your livelihood, destroying your liberties, destroying your freedom of conscience. But if you want to persuade them, if you want to shift their thinking, or at least give them the possibility of recognizing something they may not have recognized yet, you're going to have to become more powerfully persuasive. Sheer force and anger, you'll get reactions. but it's not going to be the kind of reactions that actually accomplish anything helpful. So there are a number of charts that Margaret Anna Alice includes here, and this includes, you know, the VAERS-CoV vaccine mortality reports. I get it. This is probably going to get me flagged on Facebook again. This will be my second strike here for even sharing this information. But I think it's worth considering. I think it's worth challenging. Margaret Anna Alice says, using Pfizer's own six-month data, this Canadian COVID Care Alliance presentation and the accompanying PowerPoint slides demonstrate that the COVID-19 vaccinations cause significantly more harm than good. Indeed, Pfizer's data shows the absolute risk reduction from its vaccine was only 0.84%, whereas there was a 300% increase in risk for adverse events. Now she says, let me repeat that. Our government, our workplaces, our organizations are demanding that its citizens accept a 300% increased risk of adverse events, including death, in exchange for a less than 1% risk reduction of contracting COVID. Now, does that risk-benefit ratio sound reasonable to you? Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson are gambling with our lives at 0% risk of liability thanks to their FDA-issued emergency use authorizations. A recent article titled Risks of Myocarditis, Pericarditis, and Cardiac Arrhythmias Associated with COVID-19 Vaccination or SARS-CoV-2 Infection, published in Nature Medicine, revealed that 1 in 100 of all vaccinated individuals were admitted to the hospital or died with arrhythmia or irregular heartbeat. Now, I'm going to quote you from the article. This has a lot of numbers, but stay with me. Of the 38,615,491 vaccinated individuals included in our study, 385,508, 1%, were admitted to the hospital with or died from cardiac arrhythmia at any time in the study period, either before or after the vaccination. 86,754, that would be 0.2% of these, occurred in the 1 to 28 days after any dose of vaccine. Of those who were admitted or died, 39,897, that's about 10.3%, had a SARS-CoV-2 positive test, with 29,694, roughly 7.7%, having a positive test before vaccination. There were 7,795 deaths with cardiac arrhythmia recorded as the cause of death. 1,108 had a SARS-CoV-2 positive test. Written by CDC and FDA authors, a recent paper, COVID-19 Vaccine Safety in Children Ages 5 to 11 Years, indicates adverse events were underreported in VAERS by a factor of 6.5. And she says this underreporting factor is even likely to be higher given the immeasurable pressure being put on hospitals, physicians, and medical professionals not to fulfill their legal obligation to file VAERS reports for those who are injured or who die following injection. Now, it's estimated as many as 388,000 Americans may have died due to the COVID vaccines to date. All-cause mortality has remained consistently elevated in 2021 as compared with 2020. As you've heard about on this program before, recently the CEO of an Indiana life insurance company reported a 40% increase in mortality in that 18 to 64-year-old age group during 2021. The first year of an unprecedented experiment in global mass vaccination. Now, for those of us who can't comprehend the monumental scale that spike in mortality represents, statistician Matthew Crawford puts it in layman's terms. Quote, Davison described a 10% increase in mortality as a 3-sigma standard deviation event. So that makes 40% a 12-sigma event. That's statistics talk for how far from ordinary unusual events are. So for clarification, a 3-sigma event should happen around once every 300 or so years, and a 6-sigma event should happen once every 300,000 years or so. We're talking about the proportion of the area under a normal curve that is shaded in proportion to the total area. We really would need to zoom in on it quite a bit to detect it with the naked eye. but a 12 sigma event is where geeky statisticians who have seen enough tables to know the round numbers by heart have to look up the capacity of their software package to see if it's well-powered enough to perform the calculation. Whatever it is, it's far more likely that an asteroid collides with Indiana tomorrow, ejecting 400 basketball-sized fragments as it falls that each make a perfect swoosh through the nets in every cornfield basketball hoop in the Hoosier State 2 seconds before destroying all of human civilization. Really. I computed that in my head. End quote. And if you're thinking, well, surely COVID deaths dropped following the mass vaccination rollout, well, that's false too. According to WebMD, 2021 COVID mortality rates had already surpassed 2020 rates by November. Now, given the skyrocketing risk for death and injuries after injection with these products, she asks, how can you defend coercing people to take it, let alone children? mRNA and DNA vaccine inventor Dr. Robert Malone has issued a strident plea to immediately halt the injection of children with COVID-19 vaccines. A fervent message he also delivers in a video that she links to. This living bibliography compiled by Dr. Malone cites peer-reviewed references documenting COVID-19 vaccination adverse events that could harm children, currently 140 and counting. And children are dying after vaccination, possibly as many as 800 so far. She's linking to each of these, by the way. This is not just numbers she's pulling out of thin air. As of December 21st, 2021, 71 children dead under 18 have been logged in VAERS. Now, there's still much, much more to this article. I've only scratched the surface. But she's making this plea to the goodness of those people who are still able to hear it, those who are part of a governing body. Saying if you pass discriminatory or coercive legislation, you will be remembered for your complicit cowardice. You won't be excused from accepting responsibility for your actions. If you choose humanity over authoritarianism, if you choose community over division, if you choose freedom over enslavement, you will also be remembered, but in a different way. You will be remembered for your heroism in the face of a formidable political, social, and historical pressure rivaling those weathered nearly a century ago. I guess the bottom line is we all have to take sides. Think about the pressure on those people, you know, serving in those governing bodies. Help them, persuade them to make the right decision.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.